This episode is brought to you by Mountain Sea Media. I spent half my life near the Pacific Ocean and the other half in the mountains of Central Oregon. These places are full of profound stories and experiences that guide my life, even now as a media creator and a beer professional. This is how Mountain Sea Media was born. I realized how impactful stories are to our lives and business. Stories share good experiences and the warmth of friends. They improve business by sharing these experiences and connecting deeply with our customers. If you'd like to connect better with your customers through copywriting and storytelling, contact me at jeremy@mountainseamedia.com. It's your story. I'll help you tell it. Welcome to episode 15 of Good Beer Matters.
There's a bit of art for sure. A lot of it's patience, because you are working with wood and it doesn't ever do exactly what you want it to.
I'm sure there's a bit of cussing.
There's a little bit, a lot of finger smashing.
Yeah, which is why you guys were removed from the pubs.
Winemakers and distillers rely on barrels to finish their product, while brewers also often employ oak barrels to age their special beers. This imparts flavors of wood, coconut, vanilla, spirits, and so much more to the liquid inside. In fact, for the sake of aging, storing, and transporting alcohol, people have been making barrels for over 2,000 years in a tradition called coopering. The coopers who make these barrels are as crafty and innovative as the brewers who fill them. In this episode, we finish our series with Rogue Brewery by visiting their on-site cooperage. There, we surround ourselves with classical music and pre-World War II French machinery to learn the painstaking steps they take to create a drink that is both nuanced and wonderful. My name is Jeremy. I am a certified Cicerone, BJCP judge, IBD certified brewer, and a beer writer. I believe the art, the science, and the culture of beer has more of a profound effect on us than we realize. I believe there's a world of wisdom found in every glass, and I intend to get to the bottom of it. This is Good Beer Matters. These are the stories of us, of great food and the beer that brings it all together. I hope you enjoy episode 15 of Good Beer Matters with Rogue Nation's assistant cooper, Travis Bates.
Well, we start out getting these, which is slab stave that comes out of the tree. They get the tree and they quarter saw it, and then they cut these slabs out. And we get these and we'll trim all of the sap wood and the bark wood and anything that's got too many splits or cracks or big knots like this. This is a display because it's pretty much useless. We get a stave that's not really big enough to use out of this. So we use this for show and tell. So we get them like that, and then we turn them in to, raw staves, and we air dry them. Stack them on a pallet, spaces in between them, let them air dry. And then after they're done drying, get the right moisture content, we bring them back inside and we start milling them. We'll take these here.
How do you assess moisture content? By weight?
We actually have a moisture meter. And so we stab it in there, it'll show us what percentage moisture it is. We're trying to get around 12% is what we're shooting for, 15, 8, somewhere around there. It's kind of, it's not exact what we're doing here because of the facility and having the ocean right here.
Sure.
Kind of affects the moisture content quite a bit. So, but we're looking around 12% for the most part. So we'll take these and we'll run them through our outside planer. This is pre-World War II French. This is one of the old pieces of machinery that came down to us. And this puts the curve on the back side of the stave. This doesn't have a whole lot of one, but this end you can probably see a little better.
The curve?
Yeah,
Transversely?
Yes, and we call that an outside planer, or a backing.
Okay.
So we'll run it through the backer, and we'll get that nice little round, which helps us get a nice round barrel that we don't have to do a horrible amount of sawing at, or sanding, I mean. And then we'll take it and we'll cut it down to our specified length for the style of barrel that we are making. All different styles of barrels have different heights and, okay. and widths and whatnot. So we cut them down to where we want them for our barrels, and then we will run them through the hollower. The hollower does the opposite of what the backer does. It hollows out the inside. These ones you can see better, the backing
okay,
and the
yeah.
hollowing.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And then once we get them all hollowed, we will move them over to our stave jointer, which does all of the beautiful work. It is what makes the staves narrower at both ends and fat in the middle. And it also cuts this nice bevel, which secures our gallonage once we get the barrel all set together. The different pitch of the bevel determines the different size of the barrel. And so once we do that, we will take them and lay them out on the table. We have our marks here, which is our specific width of our barrel to get the approximate gallons that we're looking. We're looking for around 53 gallons per barrel. We hit pretty close, 52.8, 53.4. So for the most part, sometimes we get ones that are a little bigger, just kind of how it is. And then we'll take those, we'll grade them, make sure there aren't any more splits, make sure that all of our cuts are even and where they're supposed to be. And then we will raise them, bring them into a skirt or a rose, which what we do is we'll take one stave to start with. I'll show you real quick here. Use our raising hoop here, and we'll take these staves. And we will line them on the inside. And we'll do this all the way around it until we get to the last one. We'll pull the catch out and drop some of our truss hoops, which are these big steel ones here that are thick and durable. They will withstand lots and lots of hammering. And that's what I have on this here. Our bilge, our quarter, and our chime. And then we'll take these over to our cressets, which are these nice steel pots with air holes in them. And we will build a fire with our oak cutoff that we cannot use for the wood we can't use for making barrels. We will burn to toast and char. So we'll put the skirts over these cressets, heat them up, spray them down with purified water every few minutes to keep them nice and wet and so they get hot and pliable. And when they are hot enough and flexible enough, we will put them on the hydraulic bender and it will bend the bottom in so that it looks round and tight like
oh, wow.
the top. This was just a pine barrel we were messing with because we yeah. had some,
oh, really?
Some pieces cool. for fixing one of our pieces of machinery, and so we thought it would be fun just to because we could.
That's interesting.
Huh. And so then we will put a catch hoop on the bottom, which is a hoop that you can release. We'll put that around the bottom of it, take it off the hoop, the closing machine, the hydraulic closing machine, and flip it over and then put three more truss hoops on it, return it back over the crescent and toast it. And keep feeding the fire and we'll toast it. The toasting can last 2 to 4 to 6 hours depending on the quality of our firewood and the humidity and temperature and whatnot. And we toast our whiskey barrels to a medium plus toast, which is a pretty darn dark toast. And then we'll put a number 3 char on it. We'll actually light them on fire once we get to the medium plus toast that we like. We'll physically light the barrels on fire and char the inside of them. Approximately 45 seconds. It's one of the coolest things. I wish I had one going so we could show you because it's
well,
pretty fun.
I've seen pictures of it. It seems pretty spectacular.
It is. It's pretty neat shooting flames everywhere. Yeah.
But how do you assess the medium plus char? And is that all just by experience and eyeballing it?
Or? Yes. The medium plus toast, mostly you will get the right color and the right smell. Nate likes to compare it to a fresh roasted cacao. And I think more of it is like a deep smoky caramel. Each of us has our different way of identifying it. But it's mostly that you get this nice sweet smell where you can smell the caramelized sugars in the woods. And then color, once they get a really nice, dark, dark, deep brown color. So it's kind of a combination of sight and smell and timing.
So how do you get it to be evenly charred throughout?
Well, when we toast it, every few minutes, so often 15 or 20 minutes, we will flip the barrel over so that we get an equal toast on the whole thing. And then when we char it, we pretty much start at the bottom, light the fire, and it just works its way up very quickly. And if it's not charring, burning the way we like, we'll just kind of tip it a little bit, let a little extra oxygen in
it. So like, you know, boost it. When the stuff is cooking more in the back of the oven than the front, you just flip it around?
Yep, just kind of rotate it around so that you can even it out. Yep.
All right. How do you do the heads?
The heads, we take, I'm kind of in the process of, we're making some promotional heads for our Rolling Thunder Stout this year.
Yeah, those are badass.
And that's what I'm in the process of doing right now. We don't usually have this around. That is just to keep them these promotional ones together, because they're not actually in a barrel. They're going to be exposed
that's
to
right.
different.
That doesn't translate in audio very well, so we're good.
Oh yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a microphone, not a camera. So we pick out our staves that we like our heading. This is not good heading. I'm using them for the promotional things because it's way cheaper to waste bad wood than good wood. So we take them, we line them up, and We will run them through our shaper here that cuts a tongue and groove in it, and then we'll take them over to the atomic head smasher. And what it does is it will put pressure down on the whole head blank, and then we will come in with the top and smash them into place, and it'll compact them all down.
Like a wood baler.
Kind of like a wood baler. And then we will we'll scribe our circle on them for rounding. We'll take the square head blanks, we'll take them over to our bandsaw, and we will round them manually. And then they're ready to be cut to order, pretty much. Once we get the crows on the toasted or the finished charred barrels, we'll crows them, which cuts the bevels for the head to sit in. Once we get that done, we compass the inside to get our size of the head, and then we'll program it into our machine here, which is manual as well, which some dials and knobs and whatnot. And then we'll put our rounded blank into our rounding saw, and it will cut our heads. Let me see if I've got one on. I have one here, just so you can take a look. See?
Oh yeah.
It cuts the bevel on the head, and the bead here is called the crows. It'll fit right in to the barrel. And then from there we will drive the hoops back on after setting the heads. Before we set the heads, we will run a bead of beeswax on the inside of the crows. This is what the crows is this part here, little slat in the top of the stave to set the head in. So we'll put it in there, a little bit of beeswax, we'll set our heads, drive hoops back over it, and then put it on our water tester, and make sure that they hold liquid. Oh, I missed drilling the bunghole. We do that before we put it on the crozer. We will drill and cauterize the bunghole.
Gotcha.
And then we'll put them on and water test them. And if they hold water, fantastic. If there are any leaks in the joints of the staves, we will open them back up, and we will slide some cattails in between them, and then hammer the hoops back down, seal them back up, and the cattails will swell and plug the leak.
What do you have going on up there? Usually the cattails.
Those are cattails. They're up there drying.
Oh, those are cattails.
Yeah. Yeah, they start out like that, and then we'll unwrap them, take the core out of them.
Okay.
Yeah, so quite literally, the plants, the cattails, the estuarian tall, spiky things with hot dogs, those are the, you guys take the slivers of those and stick them in there.
Yeah, we'll take the layers of skin on the outside of them and plug our holes. Unless they're not.
Those are a very useful plant.
Yeah.
You can use it for all sorts of stuff.
All sorts of stuff. They're edible, too.
Yes, they are. I've never eaten any, but...
Nor have I, but I would if I were starving and near some water.
If I had to. But if we have knots, we will plug them with a spile, which we just use oak doweling. A lot of other places, they would make their own spiles out of scrap wood, cut them and mill them down to work. But we found that the doweling works just fine.
Perfect.
And then from there, if once they hold water, we will put them on the sander and sand the barrels. And what it does, we put them on the sander and it will rotate the barrel. Spin the barrel as we run the sanding belt across it. And that gets the real nice, these nice blonde looking finished barrels. And then we'll run the finish hoops on them and brand them, number them, and then they're ready to have their whiskey put in them.
Beautiful.
That's fantastic. So how long is the process of making a barrel from, okay, here's the wood, go?
It takes, once the wood is milled to working staves, it takes 3 days to put together char, toast, crows, heads, and finish a barrel. It takes approximately 3 days for the process. It could take approximately a day and a half to mill enough raw staves to make 5 barrels.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a process. And that's what we do. The guys over at Oregon Barrel Works, they quarter the logs and then slab them for us. And right now they are doing a lot of the raw stave trimming.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. And so then, it's a process.
Then how long was your, for lack of better words, your schooling? How long your training in cooperage?
It was 6 months. Very short crash course.
And that 6 months was the crash course.
Yeah. Nate and I both spent 6 months at Oregon Barrel Works, and now we're doing here.
How long should that training take in an ideal setting?
A decade. But when traditional cooperages when they train, they start people and they teach them how to file the chisels, and you got to do that for a certain amount of time, and we'll show you how to shape the hoops. You got to do that for a certain amount.
So it's more of like a traditional style apprenticeship where there's a certain amount of bureaucracy, and if you want, you got to earn it.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Coopering, there's a lot of tradition. A lot of things are done for traditional reasons.
Kind of like if you want to brew, you start washing kegs.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, it's very much the same thing, yeah.
How bad do you want it, kid?
Uh-huh. Yeah, you want to be a chef, you start washing dishes.
Yep.
Yes, exactly.
So you got to do that without washing kegs or washing dishes.
I did. I did. I sanded a lot of wood and cut a lot of fingers.
Nice.
And how many barrels are you making a week now with you and Nate combined forces?
Nate's figured out we were doing approximately 1.6 a day when we're in full production. Mm-hmm. When we have all of the wood at hand and none of our machinery is broken. I spent half the morning fixing the head press because it busted, so... So I spent half the morning working on that today, or this morning anyway.
So I see a combination of like that piece of equipment over there, the circa World War II French machinery, as well as some modern machinery too. What is the experience like of trying to work with the old and new equipment and maintenance? And
there's a lot of maintenance. The old equipment, we don't really have any manuals for, and you can't really get spare parts for them, so we have to find ways to fix this machinery.
A lot of duct tape and baling wire.
Some baling wire, more Gorilla tape. But we've got a great maintenance department over at the brewery, so if we have any major issues, they'll come over and attack them, whether it be fabricating pieces or getting a hold of somebody who can fabricate pieces. Mm. Nate and I do quite a bit of that ourselves, just out of necessity. But big issues, a lot of the electrical stuff, we have the guys over at the brewery take care of. But it's challenging a lot of times. keeps us on our toes. If something pops or breaks or dings, we've got to sit back and scratch our head for a minute and go, okay, now how is the best way to attack this? How is it going to work without having to redo it four times?
How long have you been with Rogue?
I've been here 3.5 years.
And what did you do before this?
I was an assistant manager at the Bayfront Pub.
The Bayfront Pub. Mm-hmm. So what compelled you to kind of step forward and say, yeah, I'm going to build some barrels?
When I first found out that we were opening a cooperage, I thought this is what I need to do. I don't need to be tending bar and running pubs anymore. I did it for 27 years, so it was time for a change. And I never thought it would really happen. And then one day, one of the big bosses sent out an email that said, hey, we're thinking about putting a second cooper on. And I didn't hesitate. I fired off emails to everybody and said, please, 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 please. And they all said, what? You're a pub guy. What are you talking about? But I think I bugged enough people. It worked out. I'm glad it did. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, fantastic thing to be doing.
And is coopering a barrel pretty much an art in and of itself?
There's a bit of art for sure. A lot of it's patience because you are working with wood and it doesn't ever do exactly what you want it to.
I'm sure there's a bit of cussing.
There's a little bit, a lot of finger smashing.
Yeah, which is why you guys were removed from the pubs.
Right.
I mean, I hate to say this is like a cliche, overplayed term, but it is like truly craft because the wood is different and every barrel is different. And yeah, it takes a lot of patience. And you can see, like, you're just looking at these barrels, they're all different, they're all special. And
Anna, you're right, it is a lot of craft.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing a quote somewhere, and I forget how it goes exactly, but they talked about the difference between work and craft and art. But it seems to me like, you know, like an artist, writing a song or painting a painting or something like that, or even coming up with the beers. To me, art is just a different way of communicating, and craft is reproducing that again and again and again. So in at least in my mind, and so in the terms of like songwriters and musicians, well, they create the song, they write the song, and then they play it again and again. So now that communication comes from the artistry of each performance, but they're crafting that song. And so given kind of that context, so you guys are creating this or crafting this these barrels, but to get kind of foofy and woo-woo and philosophical, what are you communicating through these barrels and the story behind these barrels?
My love of whiskey.
Yeah, I think too. And also with the Oregon oak. And the fact that we are, you know, I think it goes back to quality. We control quality. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're doing here by this trying to work on our craft and to express the Oregon oak that we use.
Yeah, because what we do here reflects throughout many products that we make. Not only do we have whiskeys in our barrels, but we do the stouts in our barrels. And that's... That's a big thing because every little bit of it reflects on the flavors and the quality of the craft that all these other folks are doing. The Jake over at the distillery and the guys over at the brewery, and it's a great collaboration between many different parts of the Rogue.
Yeah, it's everything we do from farming, distilling,
everything,
coopering, and so it's part of like. This idea, this like concept of a revolution back in the day in like the late 80s, early 90s, it was like our revolution is craft beer. Like no one was doing craft beer. So that's what we were fighting for. Now you could maybe say like our revolution is doing these things like coopering and farming and distilling and then putting it all together, controlling our quality is part of the revolution and doing things ourselves because that's how we can control it.
I think it makes our products more craft than just the typical craft beers and small batch craft spirits that are out there. Being able to have a hand in every little bit of it makes it that much more than any of the other.
Yeah, Roe clearly wants to have, has a story to tell, an organ story to tell, and they want to have control over all these different aspects so that they can tell it the way they want to tell it. Not that other people tell it poorly, but maybe they tell it differently. It's just kind of like the general sense I get having experienced the different facets of Rogue. But
yeah, and we like a challenge. It's a creative challenge, and it was like a craft beer, like bringing craft beer to the market back in the 90s was a challenge, and this is a challenge to bring, like, we're coopering, here's a liquid that comes from coopering our own barrels. Like, that's a challenge, and also a challenge to bring to the market because not everyone completely gets, like, to see this and mm-hmm. to know what Rolling Thunder is and to tell that story. That's you know, but we're prepared to do it. We're slowly doing it. Slowly doing it.
Everything takes time.
Yeah.
Anything worth it takes time.
Yeah.
I have spoken to people who complain about rising prices of craft beer, especially barrel-aged. Brewing something worthy of going into a handcrafted barrel, which then takes up valuable space and time for months or years, is surely worth a few extra dollars. After all, barrel-aged beer is meant to savor, not to slam. In the next episode, we head south to San Francisco, where an endurance athlete, a love of beer with benefits, and a gluten allergy collide to create a very interesting business proposition. And one of the best brewery names I've ever heard. Good Beer Matters is a show about great beer, great friends, and the experiences we create together. But it's also about better appreciation of the beer you enjoy. I believe better education leads to better enjoyment. So if you're a beer and food professional or even a beer enthusiast, then please go to iTunes or Stitcher.com and subscribe to Good Beer Matters. Better yet, send me an email at jeremy@goodbeermatters.net or connect with me on Facebook and tell me what beer stories or knowledge you'd like to hear more about. After that, grab a beer. Hang out with friends and let the world open up. Thank you for listening. Cheers.